Let's start with DITO. This obviously has been brewing for a few months. It was one of the first things Governor Carney talked about when he took office. What more do we know now than we did before about this move of DITO into a public-private partnership?
Well, we now know for sure that Carney wants to get rid of DITO. The writing was on the wall for a while, but it just became official this week. So now he wants a 15-member board that would be co-chaired by him to oversee medium to large-size company recruitment and retention. And that board will be made up of business leaders, nonprofit heads, college professors, or somehow related to academia. But it's really not clear what kind of mix we're talking about. And then the state will also oversee the multi-million dollar strategic fund, which was a big concern for many people.
Yeah, you mentioned when you first reported on this, there were a number of different concerns, including transparency, allowing business leaders to have a say in picking who would get tax breaks and grants, and some people actually paying to be on this board. Were those issues addressed in this formal plan largely?
Well, I wouldn't really qualify it as a formal plan right now. There's still a lot that we don't know.
Okay.
So as for transparency, Governor Carney said he wanted strong bylaws that bind board members to recuse themselves from voting on conflicts of interest and then disclosing them openly. While the new partnership won't actually dole out any taxpayer money, they're going to be voting on recommendations to state officials who will. Membership fees, like you mentioned, are kind of another unknown. That was part of the initial plan given to Carney about a month ago. But since we don't have a bill yet, everything is still up in the air.
Generally speaking, does this idea have the support needed to pass? And if it does, how long would it take to actually move DITO out the door and this new partnership into place?
Yeah, it's hard to see without seeing anything in writing. But I will say that a lot of lawmakers have been wanting to overhaul DITO for a long time now. So Republicans have grumbled about getting hosed for $21.5 million for Fisker Automotive, back a few years ago. And that's not to mention whether Bloom Energy is actually going to come up with the few hundred more jobs that they need to within a couple months to fulfill a contract that they had with the state. Even Democrats have criticized the division, either saying it perpetuates corporate welfare or that DITO gave way too much money away to big businesses instead of mom-and-pop stores. So if something does pass this year, Carney wants the new partnership up and running by early next year.
So we'll keep an eye on that, particularly wait for that bill to tell us exactly what this is going to look like. Let's talk about those couple of tax bills that moved ahead this week. Apparently the first sort of budget deal to cover the state's $382 million shortfall. House passed a repeal of the state tax and an increase of the franchise tax. The franchise tax, that doesn't seem like much of a surprise. It raises $115 million by hitting large companies incorporated here. Not a lot of impact on the average Delawarean there. But the estate tax seems to be a bit more contentious. Can you give us a little background on what's going on with the estate tax?
Sure. So the General Assembly adopted this estate tax back in 2009, and that was to help cover a much more dire revenue shortfall. So Democrats got the GOP to vote for it by saying that it would automatically drop off in 2013. Obviously, that didn't happen. Dems didn't want it to sunset for whatever reason, made it permanent that year along a party line vote in the House and Senate. And this tax really only applies, like you mentioned, to people whose entire net worth is over about $5.5 million. And then it maxes out at 16% on estates worth more than $10 million.
One of the arguments that Republicans made in this debate was the fact that this estate tax kind of pushes wealthier families to flee Delaware to go elsewhere. Did they offer anything to back up that contention that more have fled the state since 2009 when it was first enacted than they were, say, before 2009?
No, nothing except anecdotal evidence, which was fairly vague on the floor. Representative Mike Ramone, who's the main sponsor of this bill, says that he's talked to estate planning accountants who've told him that wealthy people have moved out of Delaware in the roughly 8 years since this tax has been around. But the only evidence you might be able to point to is the actual revenue collections themselves. So during fiscal year 2015, which was the last full year that we have, at least that I could find online, Delaware took in $5.8 million. It's also fluctuated a lot, sometimes less, sometimes more, but really not significantly more. And a group that studied revenue a couple years ago recommended getting rid of it since it was so volatile and unreliable and really relatively small compared to the overall budget.
And just to be clear here, the idea that wealthy families leaving the state is problematic is because while you would capture their estate tax, if they leave, you would also not only do you lose their estate tax, but you would also lose other taxes like personal income tax and other things that they would be subject to on their wealth.
Right. You're talking about income tax, capital gains tax.
Right.
You're talking about a property tax, especially for schools, wherever they might live. So those were big concerns from Republicans. And also, you know, they pointed to maybe some farmers who might own, you know, vast holdings of land. And,
sure.
and that might qualify as well.
This would appear to be, as you've reported, an olive branch to the GOP to get support for some other parts of a budget deal. Is it likely that would be GOP votes to raise personal income taxes, as Governor Carney has proposed, or might there be more to all this?
Well, it seems to be the case. So Governor Carney wants to hike rates across all tax brackets, and then it would also boost the standard deduction but eliminate itemized deductions. And then also older people who are hoping to maybe take advantage of Delaware's generous senior tax credits mm-hmm. Would also have to wait until they were 65, and all that would generate about $65 million a year.
And the personal income tax debate might be a little bit more than just a typical party line type of debate, depending on how much progressive Democrats want to fight for some proposals to create higher tax brackets, again, to get more from wealthier residents in the state.
Yeah, and that's where it gets tricky. So there are a handful of plans, but the one that seems to have the most support is a comprehensive mishmash of all of them. The bill from Representative John Kowalko would want to cut rates on all existing brackets by a small percentage, and that existing bracket goes up to $60,000. And then it would add two new brackets at $125,000 and $250,000. You would also get to fully keep your itemized deductions if you were making less than $125,000 a year, but then it would taper off between that and the new $250,000 top tax bracket.
So it'll be interesting to see in the coming weeks what exactly the personal income tax part of this budget deal winds up coming out and looking like. We want to move on to another bill that was put out this week to open up area covered by the Coastal Zone Act. What is this plan targeting? It's, again, something we heard about early on from Governor Carney.
Yeah, so a lot of things. So it would open up the Coastal Zone Act to 14 particular sites. Some of those are actually still occupied. You got the Port of Wilmington, you've got the Delaware City Refinery. Others are your abandoned, polluted sites like the Evraz Steel Plants, mm-hmm. The DuPont Edgemore facility. So this would allow a company to apply for a permit and go in and develop these places. But in order to get that permit, you got to show how you would clean them up, prevent further pollution, and then you'd also need a plan to deal with sea level rise. But what might be the most controversial point of this bill is that it allows anyone with a permit to do what's called bulk product transfer. And that's a fancy term for cargo that's not sorted out in nifty pallets or anything. Think about grain, gravel, stuff like that. But really, it also includes oil, and that's the big one.
And we've heard all along that the idea of changing the CZA, the Coastal Zone Act, would require essentially kind of threading a needle, because you got these very different competing interests that have issue with it on one side or the other. Is there any sense that this bill is close to threading that needle and being able to find support on both sides?
Well, it is narrowly tailored, so it has that going for it, but it's really hard to tell. I mean, you've got a handful of Democrats sponsoring it, lots of Republicans, but only one of the sponsors actually has one of the 14 sites in their district. So its specificity may help get votes that were on the fence, but some of the main environmental groups here are still reviewing the bill, so it's really unclear whether or not widespread opposition is going to come in for this bill instead of just a few voices, you know, shouting.
And we head into budget markup next week. Real quick, anything to keep an eye on there?
Everything. So the problem with markup is that we don't know when any one thing is going to happen. But the key items are going to be whether Joint Finance Committee does go along with Carney's plan to cut tens of million dollars from education that led to some teachers getting fired in certain districts, like the News Journal reported. Carney, by the way, says that money wasn't intended for schools to hire teachers and kind of avoid using their own local property taxes to fund those salaries. But then we're also waiting for a plan on state employee health care. And those are, you know, two of the top things to look for in JFC.
All right, James Dawson, thanks for being here.
Thanks.